What's in class again? Oh, yes, we did get to talk to the Hoffmans today, and David goes for his next checkup on Tuesday. And if that is successful, and he's doing fine, there's been no reoccurrence, of course, and he's feeling fine. But nevertheless, if that is successful, then he'll go on a 3-month cycle as far as having to be examined and so on. There's also a possibility of a summer job for him, and so you might be praying about that because there's a lot of contingencies involved, one of which, of course, is that he gets a clean slate regarding his health. Then a reminder, too, about the prep school meeting on Tuesday immediately after class. We've been studying the doctrine of love, and one of the things that I neglected to tell you, and it isn't that I did it purposefully, it's just the fact that I was singling out one particular area, and that is that the doctrine of love itself actually covers about 4 different categories where the concept is used. You might want to jot these down. This is really, I've singled out just one of the 4. For example, there is the doctrine of love as is related to momentum testing. That is not our subject right now, and so I'll be saying very little, if anything, about momentum testing and the relationship of love to that. In addition to that, you have the impact of impersonal love on the part of the believer to all members of the human race. And then we have what we are covering now, and that is the doctrine of virtue love as a problem-solving device. So you see, when you say the doctrine of love, you actually have 3 subcategories. The doctrine of love itself, or you could categorize the doctrine of love general, doctrine of love related to momentum testing, doctrine of love as far as impersonal love, the impact that the believer has toward all, and then finally, the doctrine of virtue love as a problem-solving device. Then, from that, I just decided that I would give you about 15 points of introduction by simply defining the meaning of the word love biblically. And then, of course, from that, we get some truths as to what love is, and then we also get some truth as to what love isn't. And what you generally hear, love, and the way it's used today, don't believe it. Let's make love means let's have sex. I love thus and thus means I have a great liking for it. For example, a thing or a particular vegetable or some type of meat or whatever. There was an expression that one of the friends of my girls, as they were growing up, she'd come to us occasionally and she'd say, "Don't you love it?" Well, she used that as a cure-all for everything. And so, even in the Greek language, originally the word agape was a very, very strong word. Now it's used the same as it's used in English. We've covered so far 5 major points of definition, and I reviewed them quickly this morning for the benefit of our visitors. And please be tolerable with that regard, because when I see visitors, you know, we just can't jump right in and say, "All right, last time we left off with point 6, and they'll be completely lost. And so what we really want to do is not only provoke them to come back, that is to encourage them through the clear-cut teaching of the Word of God, but then hopefully they'll be able to understand what in fact is being communicated for that morning. So if I see visitors, I'm going to do that, and since every Sunday morning we have many visitors, that's the way it's going to be. That doesn't mean you shouldn't be here. One Sunday we had more visitors than we had our own, and I was so glad that they were here. I wondered where y'all were. All right, this morning we left off with point 5, and we made it very clear that there are certain areas of love Concentration, for example, is one very important factor. Then we talked about the exclusionary factor, and we'll see again that exclusion is actually called intimacy. Because you see, when you are intimate with someone, you exclude yourself with them to a place. And there you are intimate with that individual. For example, if we were to say that so-and-so has an intimate relationship with God, it would be that he would exclude himself occasionally and express that intimacy. And since it fits in with our current study during the week, that would be in prayer. There's no more intimate expression on your part, and that is talking to the Father. It would be inconceivable for anyone to show any type of intimacy and not expressing it in some form of communication. It might be sign language, it might be written, but in our case, of course, we have the privilege of prayer in audible or in silent prayer. And remember, God hears silent prayer just as loudly as he hears audible prayer. The fact of the matter is, when you pray audibly, that is generally for the benefit of others, whereas when you pray silently, there's where the intimacy factor comes in. Now, if you feel that you have to express yourself audibly when you're praying, that's fine. The Lord hears it either way. Remember, he reads our thoughts. However, we know something else, that there are enemies of the cross and enemies of the believer, and they can hear them also. Whereas when you pray silently or mentally, they cannot in any way read your mind, and therefore they're in a cloud as far as what it is you've been praying about. And I'd suggest there'd be times in your life where you pray about something that's very serious without expressing it to anyone verbally, silently before the Lord. And you'll see amazing things happen because the demonic host have no way of interpreting what you have prayed. You know it. The Lord knows it. That's intimate, see. So intimacy then is based on the function and concentration of your soul toward someone. In this case, we're singling out the most important factor for the believer, and that is their personal love for God the Father. This is something that develops. It doesn't just arrive one day. You don't reach a point and you say, well, I've finally gotten to the point now where I have maximum personal love for God the Father. No. You have very little at the point of salvation. Hopefully, with enough doctrine, within a year, you have a better expression of that personal love. Within 5 years, obviously, five more years of doctrine that has been accumulated in your soul. 10 years later, 25 years later, 50 years later, until the point of your physical demise, and obviously that should be the time, the highest point in your life with personal love. The ideal thing, of course, is to have that transition be so normal for you that the next thing God would have to do would be to take you to himself because of your intimate relationship with him. That's the way it should be. Too many believers are strange, and they're estranged as well. They have no real meaningful relationship with Christ. They have no real meaningful love for the Lord. Oh, they talk about love and they sing about it, and it's in the hymn books, and it's almost a ditty. Their life is a ditty. But of course, we don't have that caliber of believer here at Westside, I trust. Point six, we begin this evening with capacity, and as we know in other areas of doctrine, all capacity for life is based on maximum doctrine in the soul. Information regarding whatever it is we want to build capacity for. And you should understand that certain people, because of their lack of concentration, and even because of the climate, ironically, climate can affect your concentrational abilities. When it's hot and muggy and you feel sticky and uncomfortable. It's very difficult to concentrate on anything for any length of time, and therefore it's equally as difficult to concentrate from the standpoint of expressing your love for another personally. So climate does play a factor. So we have seen thus far that your ability to concentrate is directly proportionate to your capacity for love. And then we're adding to that now, your capacity for love is increased as you increase your knowledge about the one to whom your love is directed. You see, you've got to know something about the subject or the object. When I first got into aviation mechanics, I knew very little about aircraft. Oh, I liked airplanes. I used to build the models when I was younger. I knew some of the basic structures. I knew what a rudder was. I knew what an aileron was. I knew, for example, the movement, the yawing, and so on. And then when I went to school, I started to learn all of the scientific factors involved. We had to actually calculate drag as opposed to thrust and lift, and then weight. And then we had to calculate where the center of gravity would move on an airplane as you shifted the weight or the cargo. And hopefully you kept the center of gravity somewhere within the lifting section of the wing. Because if you moved it too far forward or too far back, the airplane theoretically couldn't fly. Of course, that looks very nice on paper. Because, you know, aerodynamically, there is a creature that God has created that should not be able to fly because of its mass, and that is a bumblebee. And I have one every day who plagues me when I go out to check the pool. I'm more frightened of him than he of me because of his size and his ugly appearance. He buzzes around, and then I'm always mindful of the fact that aerodynamically, you're not supposed to be able to do that. And he that sitteth in the heavens shall laugh, because he's the one that made it go, and so on. There was also a bomber in World War II that on paper should have had great difficulty flying, and that was the B-25. However, it was one of the greatest performing aircraft in World War II that we owned. As a matter of fact, we had a man here years ago who was a B-25 bomber pilot, a very close friend to my wife and I. The more I learned about it, the fear began to dissipate. Same with a woman who was anticipating the birth of a child, the first child, with very little knowledge, however old, let's say she's in her teens, and she's not gone through it before. There's no experience. So she starts reading books, and depending upon the book, the capacity is increased or decreased. A pregnant woman shouldn't see certain movies that are shown on television at this time of the year, certain horror films that they've had in times past. A young pregnant woman should never sit amongst older women who have had scars this long, and all the rest that go with it. I don't know why women talk about that. You get together and invariably the conversation will change from nice day to my hysterectomy, my cesarean, my six pregnancies, my breech birth, and here this young sweet thing is sitting there, you know, grimacing because she's not sure what's going to happen. Then after her 10th or 11th, it's just commonplace. There isn't that fear. Knowledge, capacity. See, that's the idea. The more knowledge you have on a subject, fear dissipates. Capacity increases. The less knowledge you have, and this is why dating is so important. When you date someone, you should have vast knowledge of that individual. Recently, I heard of a situation where somebody met somebody the 1st of May and they're getting married. I'm terrified when I hear things like that. I mean, this is only what, the 9th? What kind of a meaningful relationship can you develop in 9 days? And I don't care if you spend 24 hours a day with each other. There are certain things that single people hide from other single people. And it isn't until you've known that person for a year, maybe even longer, and then they start to, as it were, let their hair down, sometimes literally. And then you look and you say, ooh, I'm not suggesting that you try it ahead of time. That is not my suggestion at all. I'm not suggesting that you try the shoe on to make sure it fits. I'm just simply saying you should have some knowledge of that individual. For you see, after you get married, you're going to learn an awful lot that you didn't know about that person before. So it shouldn't be a shock. Well, I didn't know that. I've had couples in my office when the office was back there, and we used to interview them before marriage, and I would say, are you planning on having children? The wife would say no, he'd say yes. Well, have you discussed this? No. And we went on, and I remember it was this, that one head's going this way and the other one's going this way. And I said, have you two even discussed any of this? No. Finally, I think that broke the whole thing with this one couple is that I was saying something about the fact that a man should be willing to give up his life for his wife. And so I said, would you be willing to protect your wife to your death? And he said, no way. And she said, what? I said, you'd better rethink your relationship. They eventually did, in fact, get married, and they eventually were successful. But they waited another year. Don't jump into anything without the knowledge of what you're doing. And with doctrine, same thing. You're not going to develop a personal love for God the Father through some emotional experience. See, there's where Pentecostalism fails completely. It's all based on emotional hype. And you know that, there's a letdown, there's a come down from that. And those that do, did you know that about 80 to 90% of Christians that are found in mental institutions came out of Pentecostalism? Because the letdown is so absolutely, unbelievably bad. They have nothing on which to fall except flat on their face. So capacity to love is related to capacity to concentrate. If you can't concentrate, in other words, what I'm saying is if your concentration span is 5 minutes, then your love is going to be 5 minutes proportionate. Environment is important. Now let's take it a step further. It's related to the character of the individual and to their integrity. You see, these all link together. Capacity, integrity, concentration. See, people who have integrity concentrate. Now, did you ever hear of someone, they say of them, they're an airhead? An airhead is one, it's a figure of speech, of course. The implication is that they have a very poor concentration span, and yet you'll find that something accompanies that. There's no integrity there either. They're unreliable. You see, reliability is another expression of concentration. For instance, making appointments. You know, you have to remember that you made the appointment. So if you are one who concentrates, and there's various ways in which you can do that. Some rely upon their memory, but that memory is a memory of concentrated effort. Others write it down. But you know, wouldn't it be awful if what you wrote down, you couldn't remember what it was? Now, what was this? Appointment with, I don't even know this part, you forgot them. So you have to concentrate about the person, concentrate regarding, you know, that even organized sports involves concentration. I noticed that with the Suns. The whole objective in any organized sport is to get your enemy or your opponent to lose their concentration. You know, a good fisherman is one who concentrates. That's right. I've taken airheads fishing with me. And after about 15 minutes, they're ready to go home because they didn't catch a boat full. You'll find, too, that concentration automatically lends itself to patience. See, you can't live in a microwave society mentally. You know, put it in, push a few buttons, beep, it's done. I'm convinced that we're going to have a church pretty soon that's going to be called the first microwave assembly of something. Instant this and instant that. All emotion. For instance, the holiness groups claim that you can come forward in a meeting, you put your head back, you breathe, somebody slaps you on the back, you're baptized with the Spirit. From that point on, you have all the power that was available to the apostles and everybody going all the way back to Adam. One-shot deal. And you see, that kind of thing has spilled over even into fundamental circles, into evangelical fundamentalism. People want instant answers, instant replies. Got to have it now. They have no patience. Even the video games, you'll notice they're really superficial. Some of them take concentrated effort, but you got to be careful because some of them also are subliminal. They'll cause you great pain mentally. You know, messages that are written subliminally that you're not even aware of that are being projected through a screen onto you, onto your mind. That's dangerous stuff. Notice the music. The music doesn't take as much concentration as it did in the 40s. The music of the 40s was a concentrated effort. It made some sense. You say, well, it makes sense to me. You're just simply a symbol of the time. Kids, I hear them talking to each other. I don't understand a word they're saying to each other. And I don't think they do either. And they just nod and go, yeah, yeah, man, wow, whoa, boogie, you know, and all that stuff. What is that? Our whole vocabulary is going to be limited to shaking one's head and going, ooh, super. You use a word that may provoke them, and they're insulted by it. You know, whenever I've been around somebody that uses a word that I don't know, I'm challenged by it. I'm not annoyed. It says to me, I don't know that word. I'm not going to call him a jerk. I used a word one time, and I said, smart ass. Wait a minute. That's a word in the English language. But that's our first reaction. Wise guy. It was something difficult like the. I don't remember exactly, but it was real hard words. Now, it's a point six in its entirety. It's quite lengthy. This means capacity to love is related to capacity to concentrate. It's related to the character of the individual. Their amount of integrity and their environment. Here's where environment does play a part. Because you see, as I mentioned earlier, climate is a part of your environment. They have made some tremendous studies regarding the effect of heat and cold upon individuals. Certain times of the year, the rising of the moon, the full moon, the effect of the tides on Homo sapiens. It's amazing, especially in the area of criminology. They find that certain times of the month, criminal activity increases. When it's cold, it decreases. When it's hot and muggy, it increases, especially family violence. 415Fs, family fights. Why? Because you're sitting there and you got a fan going, no air conditioning in this type of an environment. This is a husband or a wife. You're married to them. You love them. It's hot. You're irritable. You're perspiring. And they say something they would have said in the winter and you'd have just laughed, but now you're ready to fight. You say, well, isn't that based directly as well on their integrity? Of course, that's my point. They all fit together. Capacity, concentration, integrity, environment. Look, is love an expression of thought? Yes. Is concentration a part of that thought? Yes. Does environment affect thinking? Yes. Then environment affects love. Because love is thought. See? Can environment affect capacity? Sure it can. Can integrity or the lack thereof affect capacity? Of course it can. So you see, they're all intertwined. They're all interlinked. It's like a painter. When he first starts, it doesn't seem to make too much sense. You know, he's just got a background, and if he's divided it into three, basically, thirds, then puts something in the background, maybe a cloud here, a cloud there, and fluffs it up, you know. Then he wants to make it dimensional. Doesn't want it to look like just a flat sheet of paper. And so he starts bringing everything toward the front of the canvas. And the last thing he'll put in is the foremost thing in the painting. And it might be a huge tree, and it'll cover up a lot of what he did before. That's the way you do it. And you see these guys, I love to watch Channel 8, you know, the happy this and the frugal this and the, between the cooking and the artist stuff, I just, you know, I do that. I just make marks on the table. I never do anything to the meat. But these guys are, you know, and the way they flip things, you know, and then the Italian who sings as he's cooking pasta and so on. I tried doing that flipping one time. My wife didn't know this, but I dropped half of it down and try to pick it all out of the, between the, you know, the, doesn't work. She says, is that all we have? Well, yeah. The rest is down in there somewhere. No, I dug it all out of there. No, I threw it away. Oh, no, no, I wouldn't even give that to my dog. No, he was looking, you know. Like, are you going to drop it on the floor? Isn't it amazing how dogs would just, you know, drop it? Anyway. But then they have other strange habits, too. All right, let's see it again. Capacity related to concentration, okay? Integrity related to concentration and environment. Environment related to all three. And love is a deep, concentrated effort, an expression of thought which can be affected by varying things. 7, love is related to our norms and our standards. So now the synaesthesis part of our soul clicks in. The synaesthesis is the Greek word for conscience.
conscience, well, you see the word synalesis, synodesis, if you prefer, the synodesis, and sometimes people are named this. We had a cousin that we met, and her name was a form of this. So it was probably the mother was thinking about conscience, and I've met some people whose names are conscience. I've met some people's names are faith. I even know of a little girl's name's Grace. This means according to a norm or a standard. The norm for your life. What is norm? Normal. What is normal? Well, what's normal for you may not be normal for me. That's one of the most difficult things, you know, to answer psychologically. Even in the field of psychiatry, you'll say to a person, well, that isn't normal behavior. What is normal behavior? Normal for whom? Okay? How about the Aboriginal in New Zealand? Is it normal for him to do what he does? Is that normal for us? Of course not. We even saw that normality in Greece. They look like us, or like me anyway. They walk on 2 feet. They drive the same vehicles, considerably smaller and faster. But somebody asked me, do they drive on the right side of the road? Now, of course they do. They're not in England. The English are the ones who do everything backwards. And they have, I don't think there's a place on a road that doesn't have a pothole in it. I don't care what kind of a car you have. It's you know, you want a malt, just put it in the back, and by the time you get to your destination, it's just shook up and everything's frothing. But they have some very weird customs. Weird, and it's norm. Example, Greeks do not tip taxi cab drivers. They don't even expect it. And every time I tipped one, he'd be speaking to me in fluent Greek, and I in him, and as soon as I gave him a tip, he said, thank you very much. Oh, of course, thank you very much. He knew I was from the States, or I was at least English speaking. Greeks don't tip. Try it here. Now it's included in the price. Strange custom. A what? 2 o'clock every afternoon, businesses close. They shut down. I don't care if it's a life and death situation. Close. And from 2 to 4, they're inaccessible. Their businesses, they don't care. They complain about their money. They complain about the economy. One of our people suggested they stay open from 2 to 4. Maybe that would help them. That's when all the tourists are out. How about this custom? When they go out to eat, midnight. They start hooping it at 2 in the morning. We went to one place, they didn't even open till 1:30. 1:30? Yeah, you'll have to come back. We didn't go back. No way, I'm going to start the evening at 1:30. My custom is to end the evening at midnight. So I'm already an hour and a half in bed. And they're just starting in. That's their norm. But they can fit that norm and relate it because it's a norm that's acceptable within that environmental structure. So your norms and standards will have a tremendous determination on your ability to love. If your norm is to cheat, to lie, to plot, to scheme, to undermine, you're not going to be a very loving person. To get your own way, to get even with others, how can you express, for example, impersonal love to all with a vindictive spirit? See? The norm, and that's what you are normally.
This is the beauty. I want to encourage you with this before we stop this evening, that Bible doctrine and the soul changes all of that. It can actually give you a compassionate love for others that you never had inherently, that you never even had being brought up. This wasn't inculcated into your mind. You know, not all of us were raised under ideal conditions. Do you appreciate that? And too often we use those as excuses for our lack of application or desire to learn the Word of God, and that is the poorest excuse of all. Now, I'll tell you why. Because I don't care what your background is, God can change it through His Word. I don't care what you went through as a child. I don't care how you were abused. People said in our last church, they said, well, you know, you can't be too hard on her. Why? Well, she had an abused family when she was raised. That doesn't mean anything. That doesn't mean a thing. If doctrine has taken hold of your life. So if you lack that compassion and that love and that type of relationship that you want to have with your fellow man, allow the Word to start sinking in. It'll change you. One of the points coming up, and I anticipated it, you'll be a nice person to be around. Are you a nice person to be around? If I asked you, you would say, well, I think so. Now the question is, what do others think? Do they desire to have your presence? Or could they do the rest of their life without you? How are you going to have an impact on people? They could care less about whether or not they ever saw you again. You know, there are certain people on the face of the earth that I could care less if I ever saw again. Don't you know of any like that? Since I introduced you, you could think about them now because you could get out of fellowship and confess while we're praying. There's somebody that, you know, you could say, meh. Now, I got one person looking at me saying, no, I mean, I just get along with everybody. Well, now, see, you have a problem with lying and scheming and plotting and all the rest of it. No, we have that. You see, that's a natural part of our being, to scheme, to plot, to try to get our way, try to manipulate other people. And we try to do it through sometimes subtle and then not so subtle. Some people are so manipulative, they don't even realize how obvious it is because they've done it for so long. You see, it's a normal part of their norm and standard. And what does God want out of us? He wants His norms and His standards as ours. And the only way that can happen is when doctrine is resident in your soul. Father, thank you for the time that we've had this evening. Dismiss us, we pray, in Christ's name. Amen. Think on these things.